Imagine walking into a really crowded singles bar. You've dressed up, you're feeling incredibly vulnerable, and you're genuinely hoping to meet someone to actually share your life with.
Right. It's a high-stakes environment.
Exactly. So you scan the room, you lock eyes with a few people, start trying to make connections. Now imagine finding out that nearly half the people in that room have absolutely zero intention of dating anyone.
Wow. Yeah.
They aren't there to connect at all. They're just sitting in the bar because they were, I don't know, bored sitting on their couch. Or maybe they just wanted to see if someone would buy them a drink to soothe a bruised ego, you know?
Right. Just looking for that validation.
Yeah, you're putting your heart on the line, and they are essentially just playing a mobile game where your face is the content. And that is not a cynical joke. That is the statistical reality of modern digital dating apps.
It's wild. It fundamentally reshapes how we view the entire ecosystem. Because when you introduce that kind of mixed motive environment, the architecture of human connection, it just completely warps.
It really does.
It stops being a shared romantic pursuit and turns into this collision of completely incompatible psychological needs.
Well, welcome to our deep dive. For you listening right now, whether you are actively swiping and feeling the burnout, or, whether you are happily partnered up and just observing from the outside, or if you're just insanely curious about human behavior, our mission today is to pull back the curtain on this exact
And
phenomenon.
it's a big one.
It is. We are taking an open-minded, entirely non-clinical, and deeply respectful look into the chaotic, beautiful, and sometimes, frankly, highly manipulative world of digital romance.
Absolutely.
And we really want to frame it with that respect because, look, love and connection are delicate. Everyone's journey through this landscape is incredibly personal, and we are not here to judge the people using the tech. We're here to analyze the tech itself.
I think that's crucial. The focus really has to remain on the architecture. These platforms have effectively become the public infrastructure for human intimacy. By unpacking how that infrastructure is actually built, we can start to understand why dating today feels the way it does.
Yeah, and we have an incredible stack of sources to guide us through this today. We're looking at a massive 44,000 user psychology study on the underlying motives driving app usage, some clinical critiques of dating app algorithms, behavioral analyses of Gen Z's rebellion with these pictureless dating apps in Hong Kong.
Those are fascinating, yeah.
Oh, totally. And we'll also get into research on the severe uncertainty and digital scam economies that have kind of cropped up in the shadows of these platforms. But to really understand the starting line of digital romance, it actually helps to first look at the finish line.
That's a great way to frame it.
Right. Because if the stated goal of all this swiping is to find a long-term relationship, I want to look at how technology operates when it's actively maintaining a successful cohabitating partnership. The sources highlight a platform called the Paired app, which is a digital tool designed specifically for couples.
Yeah, looking at Paired provides a really fascinating contrast. It demonstrates what happens when technology is built around intentionality rather than just, engagement metrics.
Exactly.
When couples move in together, they inevitably encounter the friction of daily logistics. The communication, it shifts.
It becomes purely transactional. If you've ever lived with a partner, you know the exact shift we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
The conversations that used to be about dreams and values turn into, did you take out the trash? Or who is picking up the dry
Right,
cleaning?
did you pay the Wi-Fi bill?
Exactly. It's what researchers call logistical-only communication. What the Paired app does is disrupt that cycle by introducing a daily 5-minute check-in. It integrates a guided, expert-led relationship course right into a daily smartphone habit.
Yeah, and the brilliance isn't just the questions it asks, it's the specific user interface it employs to ask them.
Yes, the double-blind unlock loop.
What's fascinating here is how it's a structural mechanic that directly counters human bias. Every day, the app serves both partners a prompt. It might be low stakes, like asking about specific food quirks, or it might dive deeply into like conflict resolution styles or financial boundaries. But the crucial design choice is that your partner's answer is completely hidden from you until you submit your own response.
So you literally can't cheat the test.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, in a normal conversation, if your partner says, I feel like we haven't been spending enough quality time together, the natural reflexive response is to either get defensive or just mirror them and say, yeah, me too. I've been so busy.
Right, you just agree to avoid conflict.
Yeah, but the double-blind loop strips away the ability to be swayed by the other person's perspective. It forces this independent, unvarnished thought.
It acts as an intentional micro-boundary against the daily grind. By forcing you to articulate your own feeling first, the app pulls you out of that chore chatter and creates a dedicated low-pressure window for genuine curiosity. In behavioral terms, it facilitates what we call frictionless confrontation.
Frictionless confrontation? I mean, that is such a powerful concept.
It really is.
If you need to discuss something heavy, like, say, an avoidant attachment habit or a lingering resentment, doing it through the neutral interface of an app lowers the emotional hurdle so much.
Right.
You don't have to initiate a terrifying, we need to talk, sit down.
Right. The app initiates it for you. You're just answering the prompts.
Yeah. The technology here is functioning as a structural support beam for the relationship. It isn't replacing human interaction. It is literally forcing it.
And clinical experts observing this platform noted that couples utilizing the app just 6 or 7 days a week experienced measurable, significant increases in relationship dedication and partner cohesion.
Wow.
It effectively institutionalizes curiosity about the person sitting right next to you.
See, that shows that technology can be a profoundly positive force when it comes to maintaining a relationship. But, and this is the pivot point here, while tech can brilliantly maintain a relationship once you are safely inside the walls of commitment, starting one out in the wild digital frontier is a completely different mechanism.
Oh, entirely different.
The intentionality of the paired app just evaporates. When we jump backward from the finish line to the starting line, we step into a space driven by chaotic, often totally unconscious motivations.
Yeah, the transition from maintenance to discovery is jarring because the user intent fragments so much. When someone downloads a dating app, we assume they're looking for a date.
Right? Yeah, that's the logical assumption.
But the psychological data reveals a trichotomy of digital platform engagement. There are essentially three completely distinct user populations swimming in the exact same digital pool.
Right. So the genuine connection group is the first one. These are your intent-focused users. They are on the app seeking meaningful, substantive, long-term romantic relationships.
They're the ones reading bios.
Yes, reading bios, thoughtfully responding to prompts, actively trying to meet up in the real world.
Then the second group is driven by mental or emotional play and validation.
Mm-hmm.
For these users, the app is literally an entertainment platform.
Just a game.
Pretty much. It's a tool for ego boosting, distraction, or just passing the time. They might flirt intensely, but they often have absolutely zero intention of ever translating that digital interaction into a physical meeting.
Which is wild. And then the third group operates on the motive of spontaneous or explicit gratification. They're utilizing the platform solely for immediate physical encounters, hookups, or anonymous virtual interactions, entirely devoid of long-term romantic intent.
And the friction occurs because the platforms do not effectively segregate these groups.
Right.
You have people seeking life partners matching with people who are just seeking temporary ego boosts. To understand the sheer scale of this, we really have to look at the data from the Attachment Project.
That's the 44,000 user study, right?
Yes. Massive survey. They focus specifically on the big three platforms, Tinder, Bumble, and Hinge. And they categorize the users' motivations into two broad buckets, connection building versus mood regulation.
And the volume of mood regulation usage is just staggering. Nearly half of all users surveyed, like 45.4%, admitted to what the researchers call boredom swiping.
Almost half.
And around 36% stated they use the apps purely for a confidence boost or just the novelty of getting a match. I mean, if you're listening to this and you've ever felt that soul-crushing exhaustion of trying to start a meaningful conversation only to get one-word answers or just absolute silence.
This data explains exactly why.
Yeah. You are trying to build a connection with someone who is only using you to regulate their current mood.
To understand the mechanism behind that mood regulation, the study actually utilized something called the DRR16. It's the Difficulties in Emotion Regulation Scale.
Sounds intense. What does that actually measure?
It's a clinical tool that assesses how individuals manage their emotions when they're under stress or experiencing negative affect. It measures factors like a lack of emotional clarity and struggles with impulse control.
Okay, so someone has a bad day at work, or they're feeling a wave of Sunday night loneliness, and instead of processing that emotion, they just reach for the app.
Precisely. The data demonstrated a really strong correlation. Users with higher emotion regulation difficulties lean heavily toward those mood regulation motives on dating apps. They struggle to sit with negative feelings, so the app becomes a self-soothing mechanism.
So they receive a match, they get that temporary spike of dopamine and external validation, their mood is briefly stabilized.
And then they abandon the interaction. The person on the other end is simply collateral damage in their emotional state management process.
Okay, let's unpack this. If the app is just an emotional slot machine for our egos, and half the people in the casino aren't even there to gamble, but just to walk the floor, listen to the bells, and feel the excitement, doesn't that guarantee an inherently toxic ecosystem for the people who actually want to play the game?
That's a great analogy.
I mean, if you don't know who is there for love and who is there for dopamine, the entire structure seems designed to just generate resentment.
It creates what sociologists call a mixed motive ecosystem, and it is the primary engine of modern dating burnout. This environment breeds immense interpersonal friction, the most obvious manifestation being ghosting.
Because the genuine connection user internalizes the rejection. You match with someone, you have what feels like great banter, and then they vanish.
Right.
And the natural human response is to ask, what did I do wrong? Was my last message too aggressive? Am I not attractive enough?
When in reality, their disappearance likely had nothing to do with you at all. Mm. They were in the mood regulation group. They achieved their goal the moment the "it's a match" screen appeared.
Wow.
Their psychological need was met, and they closed the app. The lack of transparency regarding user intent causes profound confusion.
Which leads perfectly into the next huge issue. This exhaustion with endless blind interactions forces us to heavily armor ourselves. Because we're operating in this mixed motive casino where nobody's intentions are clear, the only control we have is how we curate our digital avatar.
That's right.
The profile becomes this defensive shield and a highly manufactured advertisement. And the research delves into this through a really fascinating study of college-educated Chinese online daters.
Yeah, the researchers observe users on platforms like Soul, Qingtang, Zilian, and Funka. These platforms are incredibly popular in China, and the study highlighted the intense psychological tension users face between presenting their ideal self and their authentic self.
It conceptualizes the dating profile as a form of relation shopping.
Relation shopping, exactly.
You are literally packaging yourself as a product on a digital shelf surrounded by millions of competing products. The study detailed how users just agonizingly curate these profiles. They highlight very specific, sometimes obscure hobbies, attempting to signal value to a hypothetical perfect match.
But the pressure to stand out leads to immense inflation.
Yeah, the study cited a specific user who attended a university ranked 73rd in China, a perfectly respectable institution. But on his dating profile, he explicitly claimed he went to a top 10 university. He rationalized this inflation by arguing that to even get the attention of the caliber of partner he desired, he had to present an idealized, aspirational version of his academic credentials.
And this behavior is deeply influenced by the underlying architecture of the platforms themselves. The researchers distinguish between see and screen systems and algorithmic systems.
Basically, the difference between browsing a catalog and letting the machine drive. In a see and screen system, the user has total agency. You set the filter's height, location, education level, religion, and you browse the results like a database.
Conversely, an algorithmic system is a black box. The platform ingests your data and autonomously feeds you profiles it calculates you will engage with.
So it's guessing what you want.
Yeah, and most modern dating apps employ a blended approach. They offer the illusion of control through swiping and filtering, but the underlying sorting is heavily algorithmic.
And that blended system changes human behavior, right? Because you aren't just trying to impress the person looking at your profile. You are actively trying to manipulate the algorithm into showing your profile to the right people.
What's fascinating here is how it fundamentally alters self-presentation. Users begin optimizing for the machine. Furthermore, the blended system provides a potent form of algorithmic validation.
Algorithmic validation, meaning what exactly?
When a platform mathematically decrees that two people are a highly compatible match, it adds a layer of external objective authority to the connection. It actually boosts user satisfaction because the machine has ostensibly vetted the pairing.
Okay, let's unpack this again. Because if everyone is optimizing for the machine and inflating their credentials to survive the relation shopping marketplace, aren't we just curating a pristine front stage retail window display?
That's essentially what it is.
If you treat your dating profile like a mannequin at a high-end boutique, how does a potential partner ever pierce that veil to see the backstage, the messy, complex, authentic reality of who you actually are?
Piercing that veil is the central challenge of digital intimacy. and it triggers a phenomenon known as uncertainty reduction theory.
Uncertainty reduction theory.
Yes. In a traditional offline context, say meeting someone through a mutual friend at a dinner party, there's a baseline of shared context.
Mm-hmm.
Your friend implicitly vouches for this person's identity and basic character. You aren't starting from zero.
You have a social safety net. But online, you are engaging in asymmetric information exchange with the complete stranger.
Exactly. You have no mutual ties, no shared context, and absolutely no guarantee that the person is who they claim to be. Because of this profound uncertainty, daters are forced to constantly employ uncertainty reduction strategies.
They effectively have to play detective while trying to be romantic.
Right. Before they invite you to the backstage, before they make themselves vulnerable, they need to relentlessly cross-verify your identity claims.
It's an exhausting paradox. You are feeling the intense pressure to self-disclose and build intimacy, while simultaneously harboring a deep-seated fear that the person on the other side of the screen is misrepresenting themselves. You are literally trying to fall in love while conducting a covert background check.
It is incredibly taxing.
And the most stressful, heavily scrutinized component of that entire retail window curation is, without a doubt, the profile picture. It's the ultimate source of anxiety. The lighting, the angles, the perceived superficiality, which raises a massive question. What happens to this entire ecosystem if we just completely nuke the profile picture from the equation?
This exhaustion with visual curation has mathematically forced an escape hatch. It sparked a fascinating rebellion, particularly among Gen Z users.
Yeah, the sources outline this incredible shift toward pictureless dating apps. Mm. We're looking at platforms like Lovetastic in Switzerland, but the research focuses heavily on an app called Haimondi, which has become wildly popular with Gen Z in Hong Kong.
And Haimondi completely strips visual imagery from the initial matching process. It forces users to rely exclusively on text.
When a user creates a profile on Haimondi, they are limited to a single one-line text or emoji title, something as brief as 94 tall and thin, music lover, or perhaps just a cryptic string of emojis.
Yep.
Alongside that title, they are allowed up to 3 hashtags, and that is the entirety of their digital existence on the platform. No face, no background, no meticulously curated vacation photos, just text.
The research breaks down how this specific minimalist design creates 3 distinct technical affordances that drive its popularity. The first affordance is anonymity,
which acts as a huge shield.
It functions entirely as a shield.
Mm-hmm.
The research highlighted that many users, particularly young women, gravitate to this because they deeply fear the social stigma associated with being seen on a dating app. They fear a colleague or an acquaintance taking a screenshot of their face and circulating it.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
By removing the image, Haimondi strips away that specific social anxiety. Theoretically, it forces the interaction to focus on personality and banter rather than physical appearance.
The second affordance is immediacy, and the mechanics of this are wild to me. Haimondi only surfaces profiles of users who are currently active on the app at that exact moment. And when you send an invitation to chat, the receiving user has exactly 15 seconds to accept it.
Just 15 seconds.
15 seconds. It's a high-pressure countdown.
That constraint is brilliant, though, because it guarantees presence. You know with absolute certainty that there is a live, breathing human being on the other end right now. Many users in the study reported utilizing this specific feature for instant emotional regulation.
Which ties right back into what we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. If they were experiencing a moment of acute anxiety or sadness, they knew they could open the app and find an immediate anonymous listener within seconds without burdening their real-life social circle.
That reframes the entire platform for me. It stops being just a dating app and becomes this like real-time digital safety net for emotional support.
Right.
The third affordance, the research notes, is specificity. Because your entire identity is compressed into a one-line title and 3 hashtags, you are forced to be ruthlessly efficient about your intent.
Users have developed a highly specific vernacular to filter out unwanted interactions instantly. The sources noted hashtags like hashtag no sugar, explicitly communicating that the user will not entertain transactional or sexual chats, or hashtag no others, signaling that users who are already in a relationship should not bother initiating contact.
It's so direct. And to navigate this text-only environment, the study identified 3 distinct self-presentation strategies. First is the self-promoting strategy. Even without a photo, users attempt to broadcast their marketable objective traits. They will use their 15 characters to list their height, their salary bracket, or the fact that they own a car.
The second strategy is effortless presentation. This is the attempt to signal a low-stakes, nonchalant attitude. A user might simply input their birth year, like 04, or just an ellipsis. The implicit message is, I'm not trying too hard, I'm just here to observe.
And the third is the interest-based strategy, where users leverage the text to immediately establish common ground. They might list their MBTI personality type, mention they are a cat owner, or reference a specific niche interest. But okay, let's unpack this. Yep. If we look at that first strategy, the self-promoting one, there is a massive glaring irony here.
Oh, definitely.
If Gen Z's entire goal is to escape the superficiality of Tinder and the obsession with physical appearance, why are they wasting their precious 15 characters of text to desperately broadcast their height and weight? That completely defeats the purpose of throwing out the photo in the first place.
It really does.
It's like rejecting the menu because you hate the food, but then ordering the exact same meal from memory.
That is a highly astute observation. And the psychological reality of the platform entirely validates your skepticism. The pictureless app is a noble idealistic concept. But the deeply ingrained human need for visual verification inevitably breaches the system. This leads to a behavioral phenomenon the researchers call modality weaving.
Modality weaving. Explain how that plays out in real time.
Well, the developers of Heymondi understood that users would eventually want to see each other, so they built a feature called Fair Swap. It allows users to safely reveal their photos within the app, but only after they have invested a significant amount of time chatting and building a rapport. It's designed to delay the visual judgment until a personality connection is established.
But the users don't use it.
They completely bypass it. Human impatience overrides the platform's ethical design. Within minutes, or sometimes days, users inevitably weave the interaction over to a different digital modality. They aggressively push to migrate the chat to Telegram.
Ah, because Telegram has self-destructing photo messages, allowing them to verify appearance while maintaining privacy. Or they demand to move to Instagram to audit the person's lifestyle and confirm they aren't a catfish.
Exactly. They take the safe, anonymous text connection and immediately drag it back into the highly visual, superficial world they claim they wanted to escape.
Wow.
The users in the study openly admitted that if the pictures exchanged on Telegram didn't align with the expectations they'd built in their heads, the interaction was immediately terminated. The text-based menu was thrown away, but physical appearance remained the absolute prerequisite for connection.
It proves that you can change the UI, but you just cannot code away human nature.
Right.
But this brings us to a much darker realization in the research. Whether an app uses glossy photos, minimalist text, or blended algorithms, the underlying architecture of these platforms can still deeply prey on human neurobiology. Even if we remove the pictures, the machine is still humming in the background.
And this is where the clinical perspective becomes vital. The Mentor Research Institute argues forcefully that we must stop evaluating dating apps merely as neutral technology products or communication utilities. We need to start recognizing them as behavioral health environments because their design has a profound, measurable impact on user mental health.
Yeah, the sources point to a massive 2024 lawsuit filed against Match Group, the parent conglomerate that owns Tinder, Hinge, and several other major platforms. The core allegation of this lawsuit is explosive. It argues that these applications are intentionally designed using the exact same psychological frameworks as casino gambling products, with the explicit goal of encouraging compulsive, addictive use.
The central mechanism they employ is algorithmic intermittency. This is rooted in classic behavioral psychology, B.F. Skinner's operant conditioning. The platforms place users on variable ratio reward schedules. If you received a high-quality match every single time you swiped right, the novelty would wear off rapidly. You would find a partner and leave the app.
Which is terrible for the company's engagement metrics.
Precisely. So the algorithm ensures that the rewards, the matches, are unpredictable. You swipe 10 times and get nothing. You swipe 20 times, nothing. On the 21st swipe, you get a match.
Just like pulling a slot machine lever.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
This unpredictability hijacks the brain's dopamine system. Neurologically, the dopamine spike doesn't just happen when you get the match. The highest spike actually occurs during the anticipation of the match. The swiping motion itself becomes the addiction.
So you're not even addicted to the person, you're addicted to the swipe.
Combine that variable reinforcement with pay-to-play mechanics, where your profile's visibility is artificially throttled unless you pay for a boost, and you have an environment engineer to maximize time on device rather than successful relationships.
But what I found truly unsettling in the research isn't just how the apps manipulate our dopamine, it's how the environment of the app trains us to manipulate each other. The clinical data outlines a typology of covert interpersonal tactics. These are manipulative behaviors that are actively encouraged by internet dating coaches and heavily rewarded by the lack of accountability on the platforms.
Let's examine a few of those tactics because they are incredibly pervasive. The first is selective self-disclosure.
This one is insidious because it weaponizes empathy. It's when a user strategically creates a highly calibrated illusion of vulnerability. They might be chatting with someone and suddenly share a seemingly deep, touching story about a past hardship. They might say, "My last breakup really devastated me, but it taught me how important it is to be completely open and honest with my feelings."
But the disclosure is entirely tactical. They are sharing this emotionally resonant story while completely withholding the fact that their actual intent on the app is solely to secure casual hookups.
It triggers asymmetric emotional labor. The person hearing the story, especially if they're in that genuine connection group, invests emotionally. They feel a deep, sudden bond because this person has seemingly let their guard down.
While the person telling the story remains completely detached, they're using fabricated vulnerability as a skeleton key to bypass the other person's natural boundaries.
It's so manipulative.
Another prevalent tactic is mirroring, or pseudo-attunement. This occurs when a user superficially, and often automatically, aligns their stated values and interests with yours to manufacture a deep connection. You mention in your profile that you value mindfulness and hiking. They immediately respond, "Oh my gosh, I meditate every single morning and spend every weekend on the trails."
It creates an intense, intoxicating, but entirely fabricated feeling of being deeply seen and understood by a stranger, which leads directly into a psychological concept that completely blew my mind when reading these sources. Limerence. If you're listening and you've ever felt completely overwhelmingly obsessed with someone you've only been chatting with for a week, you need to understand limerence.
What's fascinating here is that limerence is not love. It is a critical distinction to make. It is not even infatuation. It is an involuntary, obsessive cognitive state driven almost entirely by magical thinking.
And the architecture of a dating app is the perfect petri dish to grow it.
Absolutely. Because a dating profile is, by definition, heavily curated and severely limited in information, it lacks the friction and the flaws of real-world interaction. In reality, people are messy. They have annoying habits, they get stressed, they disagree with you. But a digital profile is just a highlight reel.
So your brain just fills in the gaps.
Yes. When you interact with that profile, your brain takes the few positive data points provided and automatically fills in all the blank spaces with your own idealized fantasy. You are actually falling for the person on the other end of the phone. You are falling for the avatar your own mind has constructed to fill the void.
And when you combine the obsessive state of limerence with the covert tactics we just discussed, the result is digital trauma bonding. The research maps out the neurochemistry of this, and it is honestly terrifying.
Trauma bonding in the digital space typically begins with intense love bombing. The manipulator floods the target with overwhelming validation, constant communication, and mirroring right at the beginning. The target's brain becomes flooded with dopamine and oxytocin. But then the variable reward schedule kicks in. The manipulator begins utilizing intermittent reinforcement.
They pull away, they leave messages on read, they completely ghost for 4 days, and then suddenly pop back up with a casual meme as if nothing happened.
This creates physiological chaos in the target. When the manipulator vanishes, the target's cortisol levels, the stress hormones skyrocket. They experience genuine physiological distress and anxiety.
Which is awful.
And when the manipulator returns, the target receives a massive rescuing hit of dopamine. Over time, the target's brain associates the manipulator not just with the reward, but with the relief from the agonizing stress the manipulator caused. They become neurochemically addicted to the volatility of the cycle. It closely mimics chronic stress patterns.
Okay, let's unpack this, because if the very architecture of these platforms is actively incentivizing this kind of ambiguity, if the UI makes it so nobody actually has to state their true intentions, and the sheer scale of the user base means that ghosting or manipulating someone carries absolutely zero social consequences because you share no mutual friends, are we literally conditioning an entire generation to become sociopathic daters?
Sociopathic is a clinical term we should use carefully. But from a strict behavioral conditioning standpoint, the environment absolutely rewards and normalizes low accountability behavior.
Right.
When empathy is not required for success, and when cruelty carries no social penalty, empathetic behavior tends to erode. This creates intense cognitive dissonance for the users who are genuinely looking for a healthy partnership. They experience what clinicians call red flag blindness.
Because they just want the connection so badly.
Exactly. Because they are so starved for the validation the platform promises, and because their dopamine system is so hijacked by the intermittency, they actively rationalize or consciously ignore glaring warning signs from manipulative individuals. The app normalizes interpersonal behavior that, in a physical community setting, would lead to immediate social ostracization.
And this total lack of accountability doesn't just lead to millions of broken hearts and burnt out users. It leads to something much more concrete: empty bank accounts. Because wherever you have a high ambiguity, low accountability digital environment filled with people desperate for connection, exploitation finds a way to industrialize. This brings us to the absolute extreme edge of this landscape, the digital romance scam economy.
This is a massive, highly organized threat vector. The Social World Sensing Research conceptualizes romance scams not as simple cons, but as sophisticated, modern social engineering attacks.
We are talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in financial losses globally every single year, to say nothing of the devastating, sometimes lethal emotional toll it takes on the victims. The researchers describe the dynamic between scammers and victims as a literal hunter and antelope scenario.
It's very predatory.
Extremely. These aren't just lone individuals in a basement. These are highly organized international syndicates using stolen photos, scripted psychological manipulation, and increasingly AI to build incredibly elaborate, bulletproof fake personas.
To understand how these syndicates are so successful, we have to examine the vulnerability profile. Who is targeted, and why do they fall for it? It's very easy for an outsider to look at a scam victim and think, I would never be that gullible. But these scammers aren't preying on a lack of intelligence. They are preying on a fundamental human cognitive bias.
The deeply ingrained belief in romantic rewards.
Exactly. The human desire for soulmate, the cultural narrative of love at first sight, and the intrinsic belief that we are somehow uniquely special.
It's something we all want.
We do. The research outlines a matrix of risk assessment. Engaging in online dating, particularly when interacting with someone who claims to be located far away, like a soldier overseas or a contractor on an oil rig, sits firmly in the high-risk, low-reward quadrant of logical decision-making. The probability of it being a scam is statistically very high.
Right.
But because the target's desire for love is so inelastic, so deeply and biologically human, the scammers can harness that intense emotion to completely bypass the target's logical defenses. They appeal to the heart to manufacture a false sense of intimacy. And once that emotional dependency is locked in, they exploit it for financial gain.
Which exposes the ultimate unavoidable catch-22 of digital dating. Think about the mechanics of building intimacy. To find real, genuine love, you must self-disclose. You have to be vulnerable. You have to share your hopes, your insecurities, your past traumas, your niche hobbies.
Yes, you have to open up.
But the very act of broadcasting those vulnerabilities on a digital profile provides the exact specific ammunition a manipulator or a syndicate scammer needs to feign similarity and exploit you. It's the equivalent of having to publish the exact blueprint and security codes to your home on the internet, just so you can invite someone over for dinner. How does the average well-intentioned user balance the terrifying fear of being manipulated with the genuine biological imperative for human connection?
It is an incredibly precarious tightrope to walk, and it's the reason why the burnout rate is so astronomically high. However, within this landscape of risk, the research presents a fascinating, highly counterintuitive finding regarding vulnerability, specifically concerning individuals who suffer from social anxiety.
Ah, this is the concept they call the socially poor get richer effect.
Yes. In broad public social media forums, like broadcasting a status update to hundreds of friends on Facebook, or X people with high social anxiety or low self-esteem generally receive far less positive engagement. This is especially true if they post negative or emotionally vulnerable thoughts. The public sphere penalizes that kind of disclosure.
Oh, for sure. You get ignored or mocked.
Exactly. But in dyadic online communication one-on-one, private digital messaging, exactly like the chat interface on a dating app, the social rules invert.
How does the environment change the rules?
In these private, cue-reduced spaces, negative or vulnerable disclosures aren't punished. In fact, because the medium is so starved for authenticity, those vulnerable disclosures can dramatically accelerate intimacy. Therefore, individuals who struggle socially in the real world, who find physical networking terrifying, or who are marginalized in mass public forums, might actually derive a unique, outsized benefit from online dating.
Because they can pace it themselves.
Right. The physical shield of the screen allows them to self-disclose and pace the interaction in a way they can completely control. So despite the very real systemic risks of scams, ghosting, and algorithmic manipulation, this dyadic environment can significantly enhance their sense of social connectedness.
That is a deeply poignant silver lining. It's a reminder that for all the dark psychology and slot machine mechanics, these platforms still serve as a vital bridge for people who might otherwise remain entirely isolated. But we can't ignore the macro trend. With Gen Z experiencing massive dating app burnout and app deletion rates soaring across the board, the industry is facing an existential crisis.
Absolutely.
We have to ask the big question. How do we fix this? How do we redesign this digital infrastructure to actually serve human well-being rather than just shareholder engagement metrics?
Well, the major platforms are acutely aware of the burnout, and we are starting to see shifts in product design. Let's look at the internal product discovery research from Hinge, specifically an initiative they call Next Leap.
The data Hinge gathered was incredibly revealing about where the system breaks down. They found that a staggering 50% of users who successfully match and have a good conversation fail to ever go on a physical date simply because they don't know where to go or what to do.
Half of them, just stalling out.
And broader Forbes reporting indicates that 78% of Gen Z dating app users in the US are experiencing active, severe burnout.
The root cause of that specific bottleneck is decision fatigue. Think about the user journey. You swipe through hundreds of profiles, you finally get a match, you suffer through the grueling small talk to verify they are relatively normal, and then you hit the logistical wall.
The dreaded, so what do you want to do? Text.
Yes. The burden of planning a date that is safe, geographically convenient, and engaging is just too much cognitive load for a burnout user, so the connection just dies on the vine.
The Hinge research highlighted a specific user persona to illustrate this. Priya from Bangalore. She is a young professional, new to the city, actively wants to date, but she highly prioritizes physical safety and activity-based interactions over just sitting in a bar. When her matches inevitably send the low-effort, hey, want to grab coffee sometime, message, she instantly loses interest because it puts the entire logistical burden back on her to assess the safety and vibe of the venue.
Right, it's exhausting for her.
To solve this, Hinge's Next Leap is proposing integrated features like Hinge Reels and Hinge Pages. These are curated, in-app date planning tools designed to help users collaboratively discover local spots, read reviews, and plan the logistics right there in the chat. The explicit goal is to drastically reduce the friction of planning so people can get off the app and into the real world faster.
Facilitating offline meetings is a necessary step, but the Mentor Research Institute argues that merely tweaking the UI to plan dates is woefully insufficient. They propose a radical fundamental shift in how we evaluate these platforms, moving toward a framework of measurement-based relational health.
Which brings us to the Bend Dating Initiative outlined in the sources.
Correct. Bend Dating represents a conceptual pivot. It's positioned not just as another app, but as a public health alternative to the swipe casino. It advocates for the complete abandonment of engagement metrics. As long as platforms measure their success by time on app or daily active users, they will be financially incentivized to keep you swiping endlessly. Ben proposes shifting entirely to outcome metrics.
What does an outcome metric actually look like in the context of romance?
They propose tracking metrics like the Relational Trust Index, or RTI. This would measure the perceived honesty and integrity of interactions on the platform. Another proposed metric is the Emotional Safety Score, or ESS, which tracks whether users consistently feel respected, heard, and free from coercion during their interactions.
That's a massive shift.
It is. This framework treats the dating app not as a gamified consumer product, but as a vital public utility. And like any public utility like water or electricity, it requires strict ethical guidelines, independent algorithmic oversight, and real systemic consequences for users who engage in harmful or manipulative behavior.
Okay, let's unpack this one last time because I have to play devil's advocate here. This sounds incredibly utopian. Can a values-based slow dating app that focuses on emotional safety scores and ethical oversight actually survive in a ruthless free market against the massive dopamine-pumping variable reward slot machine of a giant like Tinder? Aren't we fighting millions of years of human neurobiology? People say they want ethical slow dating on surveys, but when they are bored on a Tuesday night, their thumbs inevitably gravitate toward the high-speed slot machine.
It is the ultimate test of user behavior versus stated preference, and it would require a massive generational cultural shift. But the urgency for this kind of ethical design is no longer just theoretical. If we look at the immediate horizon of artificial intelligence, the necessity for robust, outcome-based oversight becomes absolutely undeniable. The slot machine is about to become exponentially more deceptive.
The AI horizon. This part of the research genuinely feels like science fiction.
But it is already here.
Yeah.
We are currently seeing the rapid integration of AI copilots into the dating ecosystem. AI models are already synthesizing text for users. A user can plug a match's profile into an LLM, and the AI will instantly analyze their hobbies, their tone, and generate the perfect, witty, highly customized opening message.
So if I receive a brilliant, empathetic message that perfectly aligns with my niche interests, I might not even be talking to the person. I'm talking to their AI representative.
Exactly. You are falling into limerence with a language model. And currently, the mainstream platforms lack the proactive detection suites necessary to flag the synthetic text. As these multimodal AI agents become more advanced, the cognitive load and paranoia of dating will accelerate exponentially because you simply won't know if the person you are bantering with is a human or an algorithm.
That is terrifying.
Paradoxically, this AI saturation might actually force the industry to adapt by reverting backward. We might see a resurgence of hyper-curated traditional matchmaking elements, where rigorous human-led vetting and verified offline events become a premium, highly sought-after service just to guarantee you are interacting with reality.
Wow. So what does this all mean for you listening right now? We have covered an immense amount of ground today. We started at the finish line looking at how the Paired app brilliantly uses double-blind technology and frictionless confrontation to maintain love and keep cohabitating couples deeply curious about one another.
Right.
Then we jumped into the absolute chaos of the starting line, the mixed motives of the swipe casino where half the room is just regulating their boredom. We explored Gen Z's desperate, pictureless rebellion on Heymondi and the inevitability of modality weaving.
And the dark side, too.
Yeah, we unpacked the dark behavioral health psychology of algorithmic intermittency, the dangers of limerence and trauma bonding, the devastating scale of the scam economy, and finally, the desperate, necessary push for ethical, public health-focused design in the face of an AI tsunami.
It is undeniably a fraught and exhausting landscape.
Yeah.
But it is vital to retain perspective. Despite the scammers, the manipulative algorithms, and the culture of ghosting, these digital platforms remain a profoundly powerful tool for human connection.
They really do.
Millions of people, including many who would have otherwise remained isolated, have found genuine lasting partnerships through these exact systems. The key to surviving the ecosystem is navigating it with rigorous awareness.
Exactly. Knowing how the casino is designed, knowing the difference between an AI-generated dopamine hit and genuine human friction is the first and most important step to not getting played. But before we sign off, I want to leave you with one final, slightly eerie thought drawn from the absolute cutting edge of our source material. If the messy, unpredictable nature of human dating is burning us out, consider the Black Mirror horizon we are rapidly approaching.
The digital avatar cloning.
Yes. Emerging enterprise technology like Google Vids is already creating incredibly realistic digital voice and avatar clones for workplace presentations. But psychological researchers are already testing a new, deeply intimate application for this tech in our private lives. Imagine coming home from a terrible day, but instead of venting to your partner who is also tired and stressed, you boot up an application and interact with an AI-cloned avatar of your actual real-life partner.
A perfectly simulated, infinitely patient version of the person you love.
Exactly. A digital replica of your spouse, trained on their voice and mannerisms, that you can use as a safe, completely unjudged space to vent your daily complaints, process your anger, and receive perfect, algorithmically generated validation without ever risking a real-life argument.
It's wild. The participants in the early studies reported that it felt weird but fun.
But as you navigate the modern dating world and seek out connection, I want you to ask yourself, are we moving toward a future where we become so averse to friction, so addicted to algorithmic perfection, that we actually begin to prefer the compliant, perfectly tuned digital simulation of our partner over the messy, unpredictable, beautifully flawed flesh and blood reality of the person sitting right next to us on the couch?
What's fascinating here is how it all cycles back to where we began. The deep, often misplaced human desire for algorithmic precision in a space where it doesn't belong.
The expectation of that perfectly clean data set. But love, real, enduring human love, will always be delightfully, frustratingly muddy. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep your eyes open, protect your peace out there, and we will catch you next time.